Position number 22357, reel 3.
Jim Donaldson, reel 3. You were saying about what your sister said when you saw her in Canada.
Well, she's a lot younger than me, and she says she could remember when I came home from Italy that I seemed to go out dancing with a lot of married women. She didn't realise that these married women were friends of my mates who were in the forces when we all knocked about together as a company. I looked across at the wife like to see what she thought of it, and she just seemed to let it go. But there was nothing in it. But anyway, I didn't stay long and leave. I made my way back down to the regiment, joined the lads.
You were telling me a bit about comradeship in the regiment.
Well, I missed it straight away being on leave. There's something about the comradeship of people in uniform that's different to anything outside in civilian life. There's a bonding that's out of this world. There's a trust, you know, in each other. And you just want to be in each other's company. So we spent the rest of our leave in Braintree. We went out and we didn't get into fights or that. We just had quiet drinks, enjoyed ourselves. And then after that, we were on the train up to Inverary. And when we got to Inverary, we were doing wet drills, landing from air landing craft in the nearby lock. And early in the morning, running up the hill to a monument, which I've since gone up to look a few years back at. And I can't believe that we run up that hill. But after 2 or 3 weeks training there, which was mainly for the purpose of the reinforcements we had from the Royal Fusiliers, about 200 of them, we made our way back down to Lowestoft. Now, at Lowestoft, I met my wife, whose brother Joe was one of these Royal Fusiliers. So he'd come up to a dance and asked if there was any Devons about, and somebody sent him across to us. And instead of finding a brother, she found me. And I think that was the best find she ever made, on my part anyway. Because I've had something that a lot of lads never had. A full life. We've been parents, grandparents and great-grandparents. And this at times gives you a little bit of a guilt complex when the time comes round to remember, the 11th of November sort of style. You want to go to the, well, I have gone to graveyards abroad, the war graves in France and that, and Sicily. And you want to remember some things, but you don't want to remember others. There's some things that shocked you or you worried you or frightened you. And there was others that sort of brought other sort of emotions to play. You like to remember just what you want to do. You're selective in your memory. If nothing else, will trigger the other off, you know. But anyway, after meeting Nan, we corresponded. And the battalion moved from there to the New Forest, where a whole host of soldiers and servicemen seemed to be assembling for something or other. We were at Bewley, between Bewley Station and Bewley Village itself, in old bell tents underneath the trees in the New Forest. First day we went in, there was like these wooden pallets for walking on because it was a bit muddy. The second day there was none of them there. They were all in the tents being used as beds. Everybody had picked them up, so you walked through the mud. But we then started training for Normandy. And we went to different places and fired off a few rounds and things like that. We got to know each other. And then we were wired in. After a bit of leave, we were wired in. I don't know, I can't remember quite how long, but actually it might be several days we were wired in for. And the pub near us had just been had the delivery of beer on the line at Bewley Station, and that was wired in near us. So we were able to get some beer passed through the fence. Couldn't sell it to anybody else. But on the 5th, or maybe the 4th, I don't know, of July, we got into three-tonner transports, and We made our way down to the docks at Southampton. People were watching us going by now, but we weren't allowed to speak, you know, from there. I don't know why. And then we got in the landing craft, and I was on an LCT with the other motor lads. And whereas the companies, the rifle companies were on LCIs, we would be landing a little bit just after them. And we were due to go to Gold Beach. I didn't know this at the time, really. But we were the first ashore because of the tide. We were next to the Americans. And on the way there, well, prior to going, we stayed in Solent Water for a night, or maybe two nights, a night anyway. And I can remember the Welshmen of the South Wales Borders who were in the New Forest with us singing on the landing craft, Land of My Father and all that lot, you know, and they were good. But when we came to do the landing, we landed at a place called La Hamel.
What was the crossing like?
Crossing was all right. There was, you could see all the big ships. There was a flotilla of ships, the Nelson, all of them big battleships and that, you know. And it was an amazing sight. I've never seen as many ships. And I saw the landing craft rockets firing the rockets off, which they'd done an exercise with in Scotland. I saw the landing craft go in. When it was our time to land, we had a roly-poly big mat that we had to roll off the LCT so that the brain carriers and that could run over them, the tanks and that. I remember getting ashore and seeing soldiers, should I say who they were, like, in section, as if they were still in section, waiting to get through the wire. And they were all dead in a section with a blast. And I thought, this is going to be dodgy. But we got to a little wall once we got the mat rolled out. And then we waited on the carriers coming ashore. And from then on, we followed the companies up. And I think the first place was a place called Ryde. But our main target on D-Day was this batteries called Lounge's Batteries or something. C&D company were going through there. And the next thing I remember very outstanding was 47 Marine Commando who were part of our brigade for this individual landing were coming past us soaked to the skin. A lot of their landing craft had turned over or something. But I've never seen men so resolute as these 47 Marine Commandos. And they were making their way to Port Ambison, which was their target. And our companies were up. We were the last lot that they passed through. We got to the heights above Port Ambison, and the commandos went in the next morning and took it. We went through the battery easily enough because the battery was more or less hammered by the Navy. But
what, any incidents that happened to you then?
Not really. I'll tell you what was happening to me then. I was beginning to be a bit dodgy. And the sergeant said to me, you know, you're not well, Jock, of that. He said, see the MO. And I had malaria. Now, quite a few, we picked this malaria up in Sicily, apparently. We were on Mepiquins for all the time we were there. Quite a few actually had it before the landing and missed it, but mine came out during the landing, you know. And from then on, things seemed to be just being following up the rifle companies into a field and then standing 2 a.m. But when I saw the doctor, they put me straight on a stretcher. And before I knew what it was, I was down to the beach and on a landing craft en route to hospital in Sheffield. And it was a hospital train full of wounded. And when I got to Sheffield, I can't remember much more, that I was in a ward, and apparently I was in a side ward, and others were in a hole, and there was a film show or something going on. But I was throwing water bottles out the bed or something. I was a bit, apparently a bit, what do you call it? I can't think of the word when you're sort of seeing things and doing things, you know?
Hallucinating.
Hallucinating. But anyway, they dosed me full of Mepiquins and that, and For about a fortnight, I was in bed, lovely linen and sheets. I thought, I'll stay here all my life. But after about a fortnight, I was sent to a convalescent depot, then to a holding station.
Had you had any malaria bouts before you went to Normandy?
No, no. But I had another two after in England. And after the third one, I never had another one again. I haven't had malaria since. Now, I don't know whether it helped my son or not. He went out to Nairobi afterwards and caught malaria out there, but he seemed to overcome it well. I don't know whether it was still in the... I can't think on that. But that was the end of my soldiering days. From then on, I became an instructor and stayed in England.
Where were you treated in England for the malaria?
The first time in... Is it Weatherfield at Sheffield? In a hospital at Sheffield. The second time I was went to a tropical disease hospital in London that had a double barrel name. And then from there I went to St Albans, which is like outside London area.
What was the treatment for that you got for malaria?
Raw quinine in some places, which made your lips go on, and just the mepiquins that we had before. They kept pouring the mepiquins into you and you turned yellow. You
know? What effect did quinine have on your lips?
It just made them sore.
Were they pills?
Quinine? No, it was liquid quinine.
And did this treatment work?
It must have done, because I haven't had one since. Although sometimes I have what I think is a heavy cold and shivering that, but I don't think it's that. I think it's malaria. Malaria is very weakening. Over the period, you're under it, you know.
So how do you feel now about having served with the Devons in the Second World War?
Well, when I first volunteered, you know, it was, as I say, out of an impulse. Later on, there was time during it when I thought, well, I was a little bit rash. But looking back, the friendships that I made, I wouldn't have missed it. But of course, I'm looking back with a person who's been lucky enough to come away whole, you know, not wounded. I've seen a lot go away in stretchers, and some of them laughing, saying, well, I've got a blight here, and then further up the hill, they've died in a stretcher. I've seen fellas killed, and I've seen them dying, and how they died, and that's the bits that I don't like to trigger off. And I'm always dodgy about the 11th of November when I come out of church and go to a memorial, what I'm going to think about. But it doesn't worry me. It doesn't come to me. It just triggered it off now and again with something. But what I didn't tell you, while I was in Sicily, on exercise, before we went into Italy at Fiumefreddo, I was in a brain carrier. We were going over the dried up riverbed and we went over a tiller mine. And it blew up. And the sergeant, now our seven carriers were called after the seven dwarfs. And our sergeant was one of the happiest lads you could meet. So his carrier was named Happy, one of the dwarfs, you know, as against Sneezy or Dopey or that. But when we went over the mine, we just must have gone over it slowly. Him and the officer standing with him in the front were thrown out the front, and they both were killed. I was thrown out, and I landed down the side. And I can remember them saying, Jock's head's moving, but I couldn't see my head moving. I wasn't quite with it, but I wasn't in another world, and I didn't see another sort of newer world. I just thought, well, if I'm lying here, why can't I move a lot, you know? And then, with them talking, nobody come up because they were obviously waiting in case there were some other mines planted around about. But I got up eventually, got to the side of the car, I looked and the driver was badly injured up one side, and I could see Swipey, the sergeant and the officer. The carrier had run up them after the bomb, and they, you know, they were quite dead. And I walked up the track that we'd come down. And then I can't remember anything more until I got up and everybody had moved on. You know, I don't know where they had moved on to, because it was probably carried on with the exercise. But I went to this garden gate and opened it, and there was Swipey and the officer's grave and their caps on top. And then when I come out, there was a couple of engineers coming by in a carrier, and I says to them, "Can I have a lift?" I said, "Are you going back to Fiumefredo?" And they said, "Yeah." But we stopped at we come up to a dried up riverbed, and I said, "Do you mind if I get off and walk over?" You know, and I anyway, when I got back to the base at Fiumefredo, all I had was black and blue marks right down my back, you know. And apart from that, it was all right. And it never affected me a bit, except when we were in Catania, went to come back to England. I was laying on the floor in the billets, asleep like the rest of the lads, and suddenly I woke up and I went right through it again. And this time I was more worried. But when it sort of pulled myself round, I realised it was just a dream, but I've never had anything since. But I had reaction then, so you must subconsciously push things back out the way. But I've no regrets, no. The only regret I have is that a lot of these lads should have had what I've had after the war. I think when you go to war, you should enjoy the peace. One instance in Sicily, it comes right
in Italy?
In southern Italy, yes. We were at a farm, and on this farm there was a load of stone jars in basket work, you know. And one of them contained vino, or Marsala, which was the local wine there. So we got two or three of these jars and put them on the carrier. And we got further up, and there was a village. And in the village, there was an old fella playing a piano accordion, and we're having a little bit of a sing-song. And he had been to America. You always meet a Sicilian or an Italian who had been to America. So we said, "We've got plenty of wine with us." So we pulled off these jars. And these three jars were full of olive oil. And that tickles me, because at the time, you can imagine the expression from the lads, you know. But anyway, the villagers soon brought us out quite a bit of wine, and they were quite happy to see us. They really welcomed us as, not sort of liberators, but they just welcomed us as passing through. It was company for them, I think. They were very poor in the southern part of Italy. And I always think, well, if people are poor, they're happier. They haven't got the envy that others have that have the money. Well, during your service, you always meet one person who stands out. And one who stood out for me as a soldier, one of the bravest men I know, was a lad called Harry Ash from Ashford. Harry was Anglo-German. He could speak German fluently. And he was nominated quite often for patrol work. Work that he carried out better than anybody I know. On one occasion, on a ridge at Ragabuto, he also held a slit trench when the section leader had been wounded, and with two men fought back quite a few German coming up the ridge, killing four of them on his own. He was awarded MM later on, and a further MM in Holland. Unfortunately, he died there. But I shall never forget him.
You were telling me something about him setting fire to haystacks?
Harry would let you know, cheekily, where he was on patrol sometime by setting fire to a haystack, letting you know that he was there. On other occasions, he'd bring back ammunition, some which straight away officers would consider to be in a dangerous condition, but showed us what kind of ammunition was being used by the enemy at that part.
Was there any suspicion about his loyalties since he was half German?
No. Harry, although Anglo-German, his loyalties were completely with the British. Harry had never given a thought at any time to the Germans, but along with me, and others in the German, in the battalion, he knew that they were good soldiers, especially the regulars. They were doing the same job as we were doing.